Okay, I believe we are all present and ready to go. This is our last case of the afternoon panel of the June session of the Court of Appeals. We appreciate you all appearing by WebEx, and we appreciate that we're all learning these new technological methods of doing business. My name is Frankie Moore. I'm from North Platte, Nebraska, and I'm in my office in North Platte, and I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Francie Reedman from Gretna and Judge Larry Welch from Plattsmouth. So with that, we are ready to begin. I'll remind counsel we are being both live streamed through NET and recorded. So this will be preserved for posterity. With that, we have the original appeal filed by the state, and then there's a cross appeal filed by Ms. Boyd. So we will begin with the state's argument in its appeal.
Your Honor, my understanding there was an order written back a few months ago that the oral argument would only be on the cross appeal issue. So I believe it would be appropriate for Ms. Hughes to begin since I am cross appellee.
Okay, I apologize for that. I did not have that order in front of me. So with that understanding, we'll switch the order and we'll begin with the cross appeal. Ms. Hughes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. Your Honors, this is a case where Ms. Boyd was convicted by the lower court of one count of abuse of a vulnerable adult who was her mother by way of neglect. So that's specifically Nebraska Revised Statute 28-386 sub F. There are three elements that must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt for this. Number one, that the victim was a vulnerable adult. Number two, that the defendant was a legally recognized caregiver. And number three, that the defendant committed an act that caused the victim to be neglected. And I would argue that the evidence at trial was insufficient on each of those elements, but that if this court finds insufficient evidence on any one of those elements, that this case should be reversed and remanded. So I will walk through each of those and the evidence pertaining to each element. And I would ask the court to just consider two things. One, the rule of lenity. Under this, the ambiguities in a penal statute are resolved in the defendant's favor. Several of these issues are issues of first impression and some of statutory construction. So I would ask that the rule of lenity be considered when discussing these. And number two, the Adult Protective Services Act and the legislative intent behind that, which specifically says it is the intent of the legislature to authorize the least restriction possible on the exercise of personal and civil rights consistent with a person's need for services. That's found at Nebraska Revised Statute 28-349. So with respect to the first element, was Dorothy Pastillo, Paula Boyd's mother, a vulnerable adult? A vulnerable adult is any person over 18 who has a substantial mental or functional impairment or for whom a guardian or conservator has been appointed. There's no court appointment here. There's no power of attorney or anything like that, so that's not applicable. Under Stubbs, which is cited in my brief, moving slowly, forgetting things, that's not enough to show that somebody is unable to live independently. Here's what the evidence and testimony showed at trial. The victim, Dorothy Pastillo, lived alone. Her daughter, Paula Boyd, the defendant, was living in Virginia. Can everyone hear me? Just cut out.
We can hear you, and now we see you again.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Boyd lived in Virginia and was traveling to California to move. She stopped in Omaha to stay with her mother. She did say she was there helping care for her mother. She uses that word. However, as I will discuss later, that does not rise to a caregiver status. One
can
day,
I just
her mother lays down on the floor.
Can I just interrupt you for 1 second? Prior to her arrival, was her sister helping to care for her mother? Is that what the evidence was?
Her sister was helping her mother with things like groceries, cleaning the house, or the doctor. Her mother hadn't been to the dentist in 30 years. So to the extent that a child helps their parent with things that, you know, they're too tired to do on a regular basis, yes, the evidence did show that.
Thank you.
Well, yes. Since we have interrupted you, I'm just looking at the facts here, and the mother had been on the floor for several days and would not get up and had not eaten. Isn't that sufficient evidence to show a substantial incapacity?
Well, here's what I would argue with respect to, I think that she made that choice and didn't want to get up. But the problem is that the first kind of what I'll say objective or expert testimony we have back to her state starts when the EM they are documenting in live time her state during transport, and she's alert and oriented, answering questions, coherent enough to sign the patient care report, normal baseline for neurological state. So there's no documentation by the EMTs as to a substantial mental or functional impairment. Cutting out. Oh. Are you able to hear me still? I apologize.
You have been cutting out a little bit, but for the most part, we can hear you.
Okay, the video is just cutting, but I think I'm good verbally. Okay. And then at the hospital, who frankly are the only experts in this case, doctors are documenting negative for confusion, well-nourished, oriented, conversive. So they're not documenting substantial mental or functional impairments. And then we have her declining a feeding tube at the hospital and not being appointed a guardian for 2 weeks until after she's been at the hospital. So I just think that there's lack of documentation, experts and other people who are observing her that rise to a substantial mental or functional impairment.
Do you agree?
So that is with respect to the first.
Well, would you agree substantial functional impairment is a defined term? Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So substantial functional impairment is a defined term, and it includes the inability to provide self-care. And we're talking about an individual who's been on the floor for 5 days, unable to get up. And you're saying that doesn't satisfy the statute?
I'm saying that the evidence is conflicting at best because of what is documented about both her mental and physical state the moment that EMTs are transporting her and what the doctors are documenting in the hospital. So with respect to the second element, a caregiver, and this is where I think there's the biggest problem in this case. Again, when you look at the legislative intent and the rule of lenity and how to interpret this. So neglect is defined as a knowing or intentional act or omission on the part of a caregiver to provide essential services. And then we go to 28.353, caregiver is defined as any person or entity which has assumed the responsibility for the care of a vulnerable adult voluntarily by either express or implied contract or by order of the court of competent jurisdiction. So the defense is interpreting that statute as there are only two ways for one to become a caregiver. And I think that, again, the statutory construction and the Adult Protective Services Act give us some guidance here, okay? A court could never just go force somebody to be somebody's caregiver. They have to also voluntarily assume that. The court can't just order me to go start caring for someone. I have to agree to do it. Likewise, somebody can't just ask me their caregiver, I have to agree to do it. On the flip side of that, I can't go around denoting myself as somebody's caregiver without their consent unless a court orders that because the person's not able to consent. So my interpretation of this statute, when read in conjunction with the legislative intent behind the Adult Protective Services Act, is that there are only two ways to become a caregiver: voluntary assumption by express or implied contract, or by court order. We know there's no court order here, and we know there's no express contract, so we have to look at, was there an implied contract between Paula Boyd and her mother? And this is where the evidence falls far short. There is no mutual intent to contract here, and we know that because of both Paula Boyd's statements to police and Dorothy Pastillo's own statements to Detective McDermott. After McDermott interviews her, and this is all in the record, there's no evidence Dorothy ever had a caregiver. No evidence Dorothy ever needed a caregiver. No evidence that Dorothy was not able to feed and bathe and care for herself. No documented confusion during that interview. She didn't terminate the interview early because Dorothy wasn't understanding her. So in other words, straight from the horse's mouth, I never had a caregiver. And because there's no court order and no express contract, Dorothy Pastillo had to consent to having a caregiver. And that is different from letting your daughter stay with you and letting her help out around the house.
Hold on to that thought for a second. So where do you get the notion of consenting to it? We're talking about the definition of caregiver, correct? Doesn't that say any person or entity which has assumed the responsibility for the care of a vulnerable adult voluntarily, by contract, or order of the court? So the third category is voluntarily. Where do you get to that notion of consent?
And Your Honor, I interpret this to mean that the term voluntarily applies to express or implied contract, and it applies to order of the court, because you have to voluntarily do one of the, I just don't think that when you're looking at the Adult Protective Services Act, that would allow for, like I said, me to go voluntarily say, hey, Dad, I'm going to be your caregiver, whether you like it or not. He has to agree to that.
Well, what if you have an individual who is incapable of agreeing?
That's where I would have to go seek a court order, and the judge would have to say, and that's why I think that these are all specified in here, that I would have to go, if he doesn't agree to me being his caregiver, I need to go get a court order allowing me to go into his house to make those decisions, to be doing things that a caregiver does, because my dad won't agree to it, but he can't agree to it because he's too old or what have you.
But we also can have an implied contract.
Correct. Yes.
And so we have Ms. Boyd, who is there voluntarily and has agreed to take care of her mother to assist her sister out a little bit. And so arguably she's volunteered to do this. And we have the mother who hasn't kicked her out of the house. I mean, can we imply that there's been a meeting of the minds there?
Well, I think that if she was an actual caregiver, then she would be able to be taking her mom to the hospital, paying her bills, managing her bank accounts, helping her bathe, helping her eat. And the record is void that she was doing any of those caregiving functions whatsoever. So I think that, again, staying with somebody and maybe picking up groceries and cleaning around the house, that certainly you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing if you're a caregiver. And I think that, you know, and the evidence is obviously unclear, but based on the fact that Paula Boyd said, I had no power of attorney, I had no medical directive, I was unsure if, quote, I was allowed to call an ambulance for her, you know, her definition of caring for her mother was not what a legally recognized caregiver is in the state of Nebraska. And certainly...
Can I just interrupt you there for a minute? Because a caregiver can have multiple functions. You talk about like not having the power to write checks or do her financial. Well, that would be a conservator. That wouldn't even be a guardian. The guardian is care of her body. So the healthcare directives, that's a healthcare power of attorney. So I think caregiver is a very broad topic, and it doesn't include necessarily every single one of those responsibilities. It's someone who provides care.
Right. Based on the evidence and testimony at trial, what is most telling is Detective McDermott's testimony, who says at the conclusion of her interview with Dorothy Pastillo, she had no evidence that Dorothy ever had a caregiver, ever needed a caregiver. And so when Dorothy's saying that, and you know, I think there's not a meeting of the minds that there was a caregiver based on that specific piece of evidence. I know I'm running out of time, so I will quickly move on to did Paula
Well,
Boyd...
Actually, you are well over time, so I know you have a third argument to make, and you've made it in your brief, and we'll consider that. So thank you very much. Ms. Stewart, how much time did we take, Ms. Hughes, over?
2 minutes and 28 seconds, Your Honor.
Could you add 2 minutes to the appellee's time, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. The district court was correct in finding that the state met the elements of the crime of abuse of a vulnerable adult as set forth in section 28-386-1F. Essentially, the state had to prove three things. First, it had to prove that Dorothy was a vulnerable adult, and if she was, that Boyd was her caregiver, and that Boyd intentionally caused or permitted Dorothy to be neglected.
I do not plan to discuss the vulnerable adult aspect of the crime here today. I think the evidence of that was overwhelming and is sufficiently addressed in my brief. So unless this court would have specific questions in that regard, I will move on to the issue of whether or not Boyd was a caregiver as defined by statute. I think what this case comes down to is, what is a caregiver under the statute? The state stands by the argument made in brief that section 28-353 provides a list of three separate situations that make a person a caregiver of a vulnerable adult. There are two main reasons why the state's statutory interpretation, as opposed to Boyd's interpretation, is correct: the punctuation used in the statute itself and common sense. First, regarding punctuation, the statute is written in the disjunctive, and all three terms are separated by commas. Because of those commas, the word voluntarily does not modify the other terms. In order for Boyd's interpretation to work, the court would have to ignore the comma after the word contract. In addition to the punctuation of the statute itself, it doesn't make sense to use voluntarily to modify the remainder of the sentence, because the term contract itself implies a voluntary agreement, and the term voluntarily doesn't accurately describe a general court order. Thus, under the statute, a person can voluntarily become a caregiver. And the evidence presented to the district court established that Boyd voluntarily assumed the responsibility for Dorothy's care. Dorothy was her elderly mother. Boyd moved into Dorothy's house, and she freely admitted that she was living there to help care for her mother and to give her sister a break, since her sister was typically the one who took care of Dorothy. Finally, the state also presented sufficient evidence that Boyd caused or permitted Dorothy to be neglected. Boyd argues that the statute limits neglect to an affirmative act, but this is not the case. The definition of neglect itself includes not only affirmative acts, but also omissions. Neglect often involves the failure to do something. And when we're discussing abuse of a vulnerable adult, only caregivers can be punished for neglect. And this makes sense because caregivers have a legal duty to act. And if they do not act, that omission violates the statute. The state believes that given the evidence presented at trial, any rational trier of fact could have found that Boyd's failures to act in this case met the statutory definition of neglect. I do not have anything further for this court, but would open it up to any questions that you would have for me.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Not for me.
Not for me.
I do not have any either. So with that, Ms. Hughes, I'm sorry you used your rebuttal time. And that concludes the argument. Your case will be submitted. And we are in recess. Thank you so much for joining us in this fashion.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye. Thanks.